The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at midnight, February 6th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
We don't simply welcome new immigrants. We don't simply welcome new arrivals. We are born of immigrants. That is who we are. Immigration is our origin story.
We must immediately suspend immigration.
For more than two centuries, it's remained at the core of our national character. It's our oldest tradition. It's who we are. It's part of what makes us acceptable.
We don't want them in our country.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to K, Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly. Welcome to the Resistance. Let's dive right in. Congress convened this week, facing a deadline of midnight Thursday to pass legislation once again to fund the government and avoid another government shutdown.
This is getting old.
And another stopgap funding bill is expected to receive a vote in both chambers before then. But here's hoping that Democrats hold together to block the bill in defense of Dreamers and force the Republicans' hands to put forth a clean DACA bill like Turtle McConnell promised. The House started its week Monday with votes on 9 broadly supported bills under a fast-track process known as suspension of the rules. That list includes a bill to clarify that the State Department's War Crimes Rewards Program can be used to offer bounties for information about suspected war criminals who'd be prosecuted domestically. It will then move on to bills to delay the implementation of the FDA's rule requiring restaurants to disclose nutritional information and to change how points and fees are applied to qualified mortgages, along with the stopgap funding bill. The Senate convened on Monday and confirmed Andriy Lankud to be the Undersecretary of Commerce for Intellectual Property and Director of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office in a unanimous vote. Its schedule for the rest of the week is yet to be announced, but it will consider the stopgap funding bill once and if it's passed by the House. Both chambers of Congress are expected to conclude their work week Wednesday so that Democrats can hold their annual policy retreat in Cambridge, Maryland. So, the DACA showdown could come down to the wire again. Senator John McCain, Republican, and Senator Chris Coons, Democrat, have submitted yet another bipartisan proposal to protect Dreamers and secure the southern border. The McCain-Coons proposal, reports the Washington Post, would grant legal status to all Dreamers in the country since 2013, a much larger pool of immigrants than even the 1.8 million that our dear president has recently said he supports protecting. In the near term, the bill calls for the use of drones and other technology to better secure the U.S.-Mexico border, as well as require the Homeland Security Secretary to present a comprehensive border strategy to Congress within a year, which would include a list of known physical barriers, levees, technologies, tools, and other devices that can be used to achieve and maintain situational awareness and operational control along the southern border, and a projected cost per mile of any proposed changes. The bill does not authorize any money specifically for Donald's precious see-through border wall, nor does it address the issue of family-based, or as the racists like to call it, chain migration. Or the diversity visa lottery, which are key aspects of Donnie's proposal for immigration strategy. I hope everyone is calling the representatives to voice their support for DACA, for immigration, and why not, for people of color while we're at it.
Ring, ring, hello?
More in the news. The only good riot is a white riot. The Super Bowl happened, and afterwards, Philadelphia fans rioted, once again exposing yet another double standard for African Americans and white people. Black people fighting for their rights as they are being gunned down in the street makes them thugs and animals, while white people rioting because their team just won is just plain American. It's disgusting. The only thing that stops a bad toddler with a gun is a good toddler with a gun. A study published in the journal Pediatrics showed that an average of 5,790 children in the United States receive emergency room treatment for gun-related injuries each year, and around 21% of those injuries are unintentional. The study also found that an average of 1,297 children die annually from gun-related injuries, making guns the third leading cause of death for children in America, behind illnesses and unintentional injuries like drownings or car crashes. The number is based on data taken from 2012 to 2014 for children up to the age of 17. A fascist by any other name. Israel, the country Republicans love more than any other, despite its rampant human rights abuses, began a move that will stir the cockles of Republican hearts. Warning thousands of African migrants Sunday that they must leave by the end of March under a plan that could see them jailed if they refuse. On January 3rd, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, good old Benny, announced implementation of a plan to deport about 38,000 migrants who had entered the country illegally, mostly Eritreans and Sudanese. Equality achieved. Apparently, the folks at Doritos don't think women like to crunch too loudly in public or have messy fingers, and are fixin' to fix that with a new snack people have scornfully nicknamed Lady Doritos. The new chips will reportedly be low crunch, less messy, and come in packages small enough to fit in a lady's purse. Chips that aren't crunchy?
Oh, that's stupid!
Really stupid.
We asked for equal pay. But this is better.
As the good people at Doritos clearly understand, women are not to be heard or messy.
You know, ladylike.
Holocaust Schmolocaust.
Economic policies of Hitler brought that nation up from the very bottom. In 12 years of his rule, they went from the age of the biplane to the age of the rocket. I designed a huge ad, a full-page ad that appeared in the Milwaukee Journal newspaper. Full page with a huge swastika right in the center of the thing. And the Jews had no idea, you know, that was coming. Okay, and imagine you're some rabbi, he opened up the paper one morning and all of a sudden, bingo, here's a swastika looking you in the face.
Another winner has crawled out of the sewer and is running under the Republican flag. Arthur Jones is an outspoken Holocaust denier, activist, anti-Semite, and white supremacist. He is poised to become the Republican nominee for Illinois' congressional seat representing parts of Chicago and nearby suburbs. Jones told the Chicago Sun-Times, quote, "First of all, I'm running for Congress, not the Chancellor of Germany, all right?"
To me, the Holocaust is what I said it is. It's an international extortion racket. The green, red, and black flag of the black militants, that's their goal. They want to take over the Southland and drive the white people out and take it over and create a black nation right there.
Jones has himself a little website for his congressional run that includes a section titled The Holocaust Racket, where he calls the genocide carried out by the German Nazi regime and collaborators in other nations, quote, "the biggest, blackest lie in history," unquote. Get that dog whistle there, blackest lie? The bottom dweller is, in fact, a Nazi, the former leader of the American Nazi Party, and now heads a group called the American First Committee.
Who may join the America First Committee? Membership in this organization is open to any white American citizen of European non-Jewish descent.
The good news? Jones will most certainly be defeated in November. That's because the 3rd Congressional District is one of the most heavily Democratic in the state. New candidate for the He-Man Woman Haters Club.
There has been a war on men in this country for years.
Not to be outdone by the Nazi, although I'm sure this guy is a Nazi as well. We have Missouri's GOP candidate who admits, well, exactly what the majority of the GOP thinks and feels. Courtland Sykes, a Republican running for the United States Senate in Missouri, is looking to unseat Democrat Claire McCaskill, says that he expects his wife to cook a dinner by 6 p.m. every night, and that he expects his daughters to likewise, quote, "become traditional homemakers and family wives. Think Norman Rockwell here, and Gloria Steinem be damned," unquote.
He describes feminists as, quote, career-obsessed banshees who forgo home life and children and the happiness of family to become nail-biting, manophobic, hell-bent feminist she-devils, unquote. Sykes claimed that he does support women's rights, just, quote, not the kind that has oppressed natural womanhood for 5 long decades, unquote. This, Sykes argued, was a major cause in Hillary Clinton's defeat in 2016, leading him to conclude that feminists are, quote, finished, ask Hillary, unquote. But he's not alone. He is of like mind with his progress-phobic, male-dominated GOP. A Pew survey in October discovered that 54% of Republicans and Republican leaners have believed America has, quote, been about right, unquote, in the links it has gone towards bringing about gender equality, while 18% of Republicans and GOP leaners believe it has, quote, gone too far, unquote. Meaning, 72% of Republicans and GOP leaners are either satisfied with the status quo or favor increasing inequality. By contrast, 69% of Democrats and Democratic leaners felt that America hasn't gone far enough when it comes to gender equality, and only 26% saying it has been about right. The same percentage of Republicans who feel it has gone too far, unquote. And only 4% to Democrats say it has gone too far. And those four can turn around and walk their asses over to the Republican Party.
You said it, sister.
Show me the money. I repeat, show me the money. Our president touts the success of the stock market, one, as though it is an accurate barometer for how the economy is doing and how average people are doing in America, and two, as though it proves he is the best president ever.
Well, it works both ways, buddy.
The stock market saw one of its worst days in years Monday. Worries about inflation and interest rates sent investors running for the doors. At the close of trading, all three major indexes were deep in red territory. The Dow Jones had its largest one-day point loss in its history. At one point, the index had fallen by nearly 1,600 points before closing down nearly 1,200.
And this follows Friday's fall, with the Dow plummeted by 666 points as well. I know what very little of this means, except for the fact that it only really affects a third of the country that has stocks. And while 50% of the company has a connection to stocks, that is hardly a majority. And Donald has nothing to say about the stock market today. How surprising. Listen, my folks have stocks, so I'm not rooting for it to go down, but it is hard not to celebrate the egg our president has found on his big, pasty, orange zest face. I love that this has his tidy-whities in a bunch, because you know it does. Just as some of the Democrats not standing for his State of the Union, like its hyperventilating Republican sheep did. On Monday, in a speech in Ohio, he called the fact that they didn't leap to their feet, applauding with tears in their eyes of love for their supreme leader, treasonous. Treason. Involving or guilty of the crime of betraying one's country. For example, having verified the travel information, the FBI appears to have credited the claims of Steele's unanimous Russian sources that Page carried out high treasonous activities while in Russia. Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution says that treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them, or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of 2 witnesses to the same overt act, or in a confession in open court. Now, these days, the definition is considered a bit more broad, as the Constitution limits this definition to treason in wartime. But go ahead, Donald. I dare you. Be more than your drooling, running mouth and try to convict these Democrats of treason. See what kind of rebellion you start then. See how the country rises up, or at least the majority of the country does. The portion of the country that is not susceptible to conspiracy and the Russians. Speaking of, it should alarm everyone that the Republican Party is effectively working with the Russians to achieve their political ends. Take, for example, this stupid memo that was made popular by over 500,000 tweets by their friends, the Russian bots. Kellyanne Conway was confronted with the idea that Russian trolls were prompting the hashtag release the memo tagline. She was offended. Russian trolls, she told the television interviewer, quote, have nothing to do with releasing the memo. That was the vote of the Intelligence Committee, unquote.
Stupid!
If you feel like the release of the memo freakout on Twitter happened overnight, you would be partly correct. It didn't happen overnight. It didn't take a night. It took hours. A few hours, in fact, on January 18th. Hamilton 68, the group that tracked Russian bots on Twitter, took notice right away. Leading Democrats in the House and Senate Intelligence Committees promptly wrote a letter to Twitter and Facebook asking them for information on whether or not this campaign was driven by Russian accounts. Essentially, Russia sparked a far-right extremist campaign to release the memo, a fraudulent memo meant to vindicate the president and perform a hit job on one of our most powerful intelligence agencies. There is a great article that came out of Politico that in great detail outlines all of this, and it's pants-wetting. If you want to check it out, it's by Motley McHugh, called How Twitter Bots and Trump Fans Made the Release of the Memo Go Viral. It's also on my Facebook page, K Voice of Resistance, if you'd like to check it out there. And she writes how all of this went down. Quote, and this ultimately is what everyone has been missing in the past 14 months about the use of social media to spread disinformation. Information and psychological operations being conducted on social media, often mischaracterized by the dismissive label fake news, are not just about information, but about changing behavior, and they can be surprisingly effective. Unquote. And the government is doing nothing about it. I mean, nothing. Do these Republicans have any concerns that they are doing the bidding of Russians? These Republicans, they used to be so strong on the Russians, these Republicans, that now claim to be nationalist. Nationalist, maybe nationalist to the nation of Russia. The article finishes with this chilling assessment. Quote, what matters is that someone is trying to manipulate us. Tech companies are proving hopelessly unable and unwilling to police the bad actors manipulating their platforms, and politicians are either clueless about what to do about computational propaganda, or, in the case of the hashtag release the memo, are using it to achieve their goals. Americans are on their own, and yes, that also reinforces the narrative the Russians have been pushing since 2015. You are on your own. Be angry and burn things down. Would that a leader step into this breach and challenge the advancing victory of the bots and the cynical people behind them? Unquote. Chilling, right? It's not all bad news, though. There are Republicans, that are distancing themselves from the memo. Despite Donald's assertion that the memo totally vindicates him in the Russia investigation, Representative Will Hurd, Republican of Texas and member of the House Intelligence Committee, told ABC on Sunday that he doesn't believe that the memo vindicates Trump. Several other Republicans argue that the memo was not about the ongoing investigation. Brad Winstrup, Republican of Ohio, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, and even Trey Gowdy of the Benghazi witch hunt, who actually read the FISA materials that the memo is based on. That's right. Keep reminding every conservative that Nunes did not even freaking read the damn materials. Said that
I actually don't think it has any impact on the Russia probe for this reason.
The memo has no impact on the Russia probe.
Not to me, it doesn't. And I was pretty integrally involved in the drafting of it. There is a Russia investigation without a dossier. So to the extent the memo deals with the dossier and the FISA process, the dossier has nothing to do with the meeting at Trump Tower. The dossier has nothing to do with an email sent by Cambridge Analytica. The dossier really has nothing to do with George Papadopoulos' meeting in Great Britain. It also doesn't have anything to do with obstruction of justice. So there's going to be a Russia probe even without a dossier.
How weird is that? The slightest bit encouraging. So the beat goes on, undeterred. The Democrats are now going to release their memo. If Donald lets them, and if Donald allows it not to be redacted to the hilt, it is possible that it will be little more than a partisan exercise, as that'll validate the Republican memo as something legit enough to rebut. I don't know. Sight unseen, who knows? But will it change minds? No.
Those on Team Red will read it, see it as BS, and those on Team Blue will see it as truth and tout it as evidence. It's long past time. We stopped talking about the memo as though it is news. You know what is news? It is news that every single day, people, men, women, mothers and daughters, fathers and sons are being ripped from their homes, from their lives, from their loved ones. It is news that Ricardo Carles, an HIV-positive gay Latino man who immigrated here from Venezuela in 2003, escaping political persecution, and was granted asylum, was told to pack his bags by the end of the month. He's being deported to a country that has no HIV medication, essentially sending him to a certain death. It is news that Miguel Perez Jr. discovered that the two tours of duty in Afghanistan with the U.S. Army was rewarded with accompanying case of PTSD for his efforts, is sitting in an Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention center in Kenosha, Wisconsin, awaiting deportation to Mexico, a country he left more than three decades ago. He has a drug conviction in his past and still struggles with addiction. He says that fears of deportation would do more than separate him from his family in the United States, including his two children who were born here. He thinks it'll kill him. The substance abuse and mental health counseling he so desperately needs would not be readily accessible in Mexico. He also predicts that drug cartels would recruit him because of his combat experience and murder him if he didn't cooperate. He has gone on a hunger strike saying, quote, "They're sentencing me to certain death and I am going to die. Then why die in a place that I have not considered my home for a long time?" There is a saying that goes, "I'd rather die like a man than live like a coward." In Mexico, I will have to live in fear like a coward. No, I'd rather die right here like a man, fighting against something that makes no sense. This thing of deporting veterans does not make sense, even if they try to justify it with the law. Unquote. Of his drug addiction, he explained, quote, "I saw many horrible things I can only, until this day, speak about with mental health specialists. And even then, after I say them, the nightmares start up again. There are things that happened to me personally, that happened to others and to Afghans themselves. 12, 11-year-old kids split in half by 50-caliber bullets at our hands. These are things that you never forget. And sometimes when you've tried to forget, they come back at night. After the second tour, there was more alcohol, and that was also when I tried some drugs. But the addiction really started after I got back to Chicago, when I got back home, because I did not feel very sociable." Unquote. He is fighting the deportations, but the outlook is bleak. And he's not the first veteran to face deportation, and he certainly will not be the last. News is Ahmed Jamal, a beloved family man, scientist, and community leader who has lived in Kansas City for 30 years, who has graduate degrees in the molecular biosciences and pharmaceutical engineering, who teaches chemistry as an adjunct professor at Park University, Kansas City, and conducts research at various local hospitals. He has three U.S. children, ages 14, 12, and 7, who depend on him. All five of Jamal's siblings are living in the United States as citizens. His wife, Angela Zainab Chowdhury, last year donated a kidney, making Jamal the sole provider. He regularly volunteers at Lawrence Public Schools, where his children are enrolled, and recently ran for an empty school board seat. Two of his children witnessed his arrest. The oldest, 14-year-old Tassin, would later tell Kansas City Star that ICE agents warned his mother she could be charged with interfering if she tried to hug Jamal goodbye on their front garden. A Change.org petition went up on the 2nd of February in support of Jamal. In the petition, Tassin, his 14-year-old daughter, wrote, quote, "Hello. My name is Tassin Jamal, and my father has recently been arrested, taken to Morgan County, Missouri prison, and is being considered for deportation. My little brother cries every night. My little sister can't focus in school, and I cannot sleep at night. My mother is in trauma, and because she is a live organ donor, she only has one kidney, so the stress is very dangerous. She could die if he is deported. If my father is deported, my siblings and I may never get to see him again. He is an older man, and due to the conditions of his home country, he may not be able to survive. My father called us, and he was crying like a little child because he was thinking about what could happen to us if he got deported. We are the children of Syed Ahmed Jamal, and we are requesting on behalf of our family for your kind help to get back our father. A home is not a home without a father. Unquote. If you wish to sign the petition, I have it on my Facebook page at Cave Voice of Resistance. News is the threat that ICE issued to California to punish the state, or more pointedly, to punish California's 2.3 million immigrants for the sanctuary city law California's governor, Jerry Brown, signed. Donald's racist administration will go after undocumented immigrants in their neighborhoods and at work in California, likely picking up what they call collateral that they are not initially targeting due to the law. Quote, ICE will have no choice but to conduct at-large arrest in local neighborhoods and at work sites, which will inevitably result in additional collateral arrest, instead of focusing on arrest at jails and prisons where transfers are safer for ICE officials and the community. ICE will also be likely to have to detain individuals in California in detention facilities outside of the state, far from any family they may have in California. Unquote. Immigrants have been arrested while accompanying family members to ICE check-ins, waiting for co-workers for rides to work, and sleeping in the same home as a law enforcement target. Lawyers and advocates say they arrest everyone first and ask questions later approach, which some see as a response to the sanctuary city movement, violates immigrants' constitutional rights and constitutes as racial profiling. Of course it does! Unlike in criminal court, immigrants facing deportation are not appointed public defenders. Nationwide, 63% of immigrants facing deportation don't have an attorney, according to a study analyzed by more than a million cases between 2007 and 2012. Lawyers are attempting to fight against these collateral deportations on the grounds that they violate immigrants' Fourth Amendment rights. ICE agents now show up at workplaces, point their guns at everyone there, and ask for their IDs to arrest them for no other reason than the fact that they look Hispanic. It is racial profiling in action. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, has now formalized a policy to send agents to federal, state, and local courthouses to make arrests. This, despite the fact that judges and advocacy groups who claim the arrest deter attendance to hearings and discourage witnesses from testifying. It will prevent women from coming forward when they have been abused or raped. It will discourage witnesses to crimes from testifying. It is not only heartless and cruel, but stupid. This Gestapo on the right claims to be for law and order, yet they don't want criminals caught unless they are brown. Whew! That was a lot. One note of good news before I go. The U.S. Supreme Court dealt a devastating blow to Pennsylvania Republicans, rejecting the party's desperate attempts to save the gerrymandered congressional maps that the state Supreme Court had ruled illegally discriminated against Democratic voters. Yay! This is great news, and possibly bodes well for future gerrymandering cases in the Supreme Court. Pennsylvania is shaping up to be among the key battleground states as Republicans desperately try to hang on to their majority in the House. This will be a dramatic blow to the GOP as we strive for fairness in elections. Election experts predict that when the new districts are redrawn this spring, the GOP extreme gerrymandering blueprint gets torn up. Democrats could pick up between 1 and 6 seats in the state come November.
You win!
Okay, thank you for sticking with me on this episode of K, Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show on crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice or on Facebook, where you'll find all the stories I've discussed in this show and more at K Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive mates, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with Patrick Vine and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer. 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, take care of yourselves out there, and as always, resist.
God bless the United States. Thank you very much. Thank you.